just what I was there for. You heard me say a prayer for.
Good afternoon, Lake Norman. How are we today? Hopefully we're doing well. Justin Dionne here with another Know the Scene for this week. Know the Scene, your weekly check-in on what's going on in the scene around here in Lake Norman and the towns that make up our fine area and fine region. Excited to have another great show for you today. We are now in March, or we will be by the time this airs. March, man, it goes by quick. Kane Center's continue to have a lot of wonderful things going on at Kane Center for the Arts and in this area. Had wonderful performances of Be More Chill there on the first weekend of March. And coming up this weekend is who we're going to speak to in just a moment. We've got a great weekend, two nights of great music coming up. The first on Friday, going to have some jazz here with Joe Grandston, who's doing his show, The Good Life, The Artistry of Tony Bennett. One of many different performances that Joe and his band perform, but this one specifically this weekend on Friday night is Artistry of Tony Bennett. And then this Saturday, March 9th, is a instrumental pianist named Robin Spielberg who's coming. So some great performances this weekend. And then next weekend, as we get in the middle of March, we've got our kind of St. Patrick's Day show coming in with an Irish band called Socks in the Frying Pan coming up that March 15th. So we've got some great stuff continuing at Kane Center for the Arts. Of course, as well with our exhibits, make sure you come check out our exhibits that are running. And summer camps are on sale now. So if you got little ones that, you know, you want to get into camp in this area, we have wonderful camps, everything from, you know, art camps and ceramics to, you know, drawing. There's dance camps and music camps, every kind of thing. So sign your kids up for those, because those continue to fill up quickly. We're excited to chat today and have a great show today with Joe. Joe, you're coming to us from Atlanta today.
That's right. How you doing, man?
Good, good. Thanks so much for joining us. Thanks so much for joining us this morning. Where in Atlanta are you? I mean, Atlanta's a big place.
I live in Roswell, Georgia.
All right.
Been here for some time now, and it's a cold day today. I'm gonna go out and hit some golf balls later. That's why I got the hat on.
And nice.
But I've been here for a long time. I'm originally from New York City, but loving Atlanta. I've been here for many years, and it's a great scene here. Great people.
Yeah. When did you? So I was reading that when I was doing some research about your journey and everything. Now, how long have you been in Atlanta?
Well, I came to Atlanta first in the early 90s. I was just a kid, and I was finishing college at Georgia State University.
Oh, okay.
I had been traveling all over the world with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra.
Wow.
And when I left that band, my parents had moved from New York to Atlanta.
Ah.
And, quite ready to be on my own. I was about, I don't know, 19 years old or something. So I said, let me go to Atlanta and finish college. And then I did a couple years in Atlanta after college. And then I moved to New York City to become a professional trumpet player. I'm a working freelance trumpet player, and I spent many years there. But I came back to Atlanta full time right after 9/11. It was a very rough time, of course, for everyone. And right. I came here to visit my parents, and I never went back. I got married here, and I have a family here, and absolutely love it.
Yeah, that's so. So you've definitely seen Atlanta continue. I mean, Atlanta has always been a big city, but especially, I mean, that time. You know, from the time frame that, like, I'm kind of tracking with you on, you know, late 90s, early 2000s to now, I mean, Atlanta has just absolutely continued to just boom and grow and change.
Yeah, it's quite a place, man. There's so much to do. There's so much going on. It's so vibrant. I mean, it's, you know, and all that comes with some amazing traffic, too.
That's right. That's what everyone says. You can't talk about Atlanta without talking about the traffic, I guess, right?
Exactly.
But that's so cool that you've had a chance I want to come back to that a little bit later, because I'd be interested, like, from your you know, as I was reading about you, I mean, it says that you're playing anywhere from five to six nights a week around Atlanta area, I guess, when you're not on the road, you know. Mm-hmm. I'd be interested to hear your take on, like, the development of the scene through that, right? And how, what your journey's been like that.
Yeah, it's been a really cool journey. I mean, I spent a lot of years early on trying to develop a career here in the Southeast, so I didn't have to travel that much, and I didn't have to be away from my family that often, like some of my friends who are wonderful musicians who sometimes are gone for 3 and 4 and 5 months at a time.
Right.
I specifically sought out venues here in Atlanta, in the Atlanta area, whether it be a restaurant or a jazz club. I got really heavily involved in the corporate scene, the corporate party scene, where I could play parties with my big band or my quartet, my eight-piece band. So sometimes we would work seven or eight gigs a week. Sometimes we would do two on Sundays. We'd do a Sunday brunch, and then we would do something on Sunday night. So it became 330 gigs sometimes, 340 gigs. And it just built a little bit of momentum for me and my kind of my brand so that I could kind of stay somewhat local. And now I'm in my early 50s and I'm branching out and we're going on the road a little bit. But when we come back to Atlanta, we always have places to play and kind of a local fan base, which is really exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love that. So let's, I want to take it back a little bit more. Would love to kind of take everyone through a little bit of your story, you know, I mean, help people learn a bit more about who Joe Grandston is. It's good that they're going to be coming to see here. So, you know, you're from New York City.
Yeah. I was born in New York, just north of New York City in Yonkers, New York.
Yeah. I love Yonkers, man. That's
good spot, man. And my whole family's from New York, whether it's the city, whether it's Brooklyn, Yonkers, Poughkeepsie, little bit upstate. So I spent quite a few years as a young boy there, but then we moved to Buffalo.
Oh, wow.
Did the middle school and high school and all that happened in Buffalo, New York. I wanted to be a professional hockey player. I loved to play hockey.
Oh, cool.
Everybody in Buffalo loves to play hockey, right? So I did that for many years. And then my band director, when I was in middle school, brought in a guest trumpet artist, one of the top trumpet players in the world, to perform with our band. And I remember I was upset because I wanted to play in the hockey game that night. We had a hockey game and it was a conflicting thing. We had a band concert. And my father said, no, you have to go to this band concert. You committed to it and you're playing trumpet and they need you, right? So I went to the concert and this guy named Alan Vizzuti was our guest artist and he played the trumpet that night. And I remember specifically saying to my mother after the concert, that's what I'm doing the rest of my life.
Oh, how cool.
It blew me away, and it really taught me how important music education is and how important it is for band directors to bring in artists from around the country so that the students can hear the real guys out there, the real gals out there that are doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. That's so cool. So because you grew up in a very musical family, correct?
Yes, my grandfather, my father's father, was a great trumpet player in New York City. He was a freelance artist, and he played with everybody, right? So he supported his family by playing trumpet.
Nice.
My father, his son, is a great jazz piano player and singer. My mother's a choreographer. My godfather, my uncle Richard Titone, his stage name was Rudy Tone. Richard Tone was on Broadway for many years as an actor and a singer and a dancer. And his brother, my uncle Eddie, was a contractor in New York and kind of a famous bass player and singer. So I grew up with it. And I knew early on the music I love and the style of music that I wanted to perform and learn more about.
That's awesome. That's awesome. All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break in between segments here. And we're going to come back with Joe after the break and talk more. I want to dig in more about that transition from how his family impacted his music and inspiration growing up. And then what happened from there? So we're going to take a quick break. Come on back, everybody. Know the scene.
Then suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms could ever hold. I heard somebody whisper, please adore me. And when I looked, the moon had turned to gold, blue moon. Now I'm no longer alone. Without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
All right, we're back. We're back. Know the scene. Tuesday afternoon, everybody. Getting jazzed up, ayo, for this weekend. for this weekend. This Friday night, with Joe Grandison and his band coming in doing a tribute to Tony Bennett. Tribute to Tony Bennett this weekend. We were just talking to Joe before the break, just kind of dipping our toes into things. I didn't want to ask you this like right before the break, because I was like, this would be a way too long of a question to have you answer with limited time. But Joe, I wanted to ask, so I thought it was really interesting you were talking about how you, because, you know, when I'm reading about you and was doing some research, you know, as you mentioned, like, I mean, your family, wow. I mean, what a resume, almost, for lack of a better phrase, of what your family members have done in the arts and performing and music and all this stuff. But then it was interesting the way it seemed to me when you were telling your story that, like, yeah, you played in the band, you know, but you really, as a kid, were like, no hockey, right? So, but it wasn't until this band director brought in this performer, I guess, that seemed like that was a big click for you. But you were in the band in the first place. So is that just something that, like, because of your family and obviously how they felt about the arts and everything and arts education, that it was like, no, Joe, you're going to be in the band, like, no matter what?
Well, I wasn't forced to be in the band, but like I said, my grandfather played the trumpet, and every time he would come visit, he would practice, and I would hear him practice.
I loved the
trumpet, and you know, I wanted to be in the band. I mean, I really enjoyed it, but my first love was sports. My first love was hockey. So, and I was never really forced into the trumpet. I didn't love it at an early age. It didn't do a whole lot for me. I enjoyed being in the band and playing in the concerts and meeting people and learning a little bit about the music. But as soon as it was time for hockey or baseball, I was out of there, right?
Yeah.
But so when this guy came and performed with us, and I heard the trumpet on that level, because, like, my grandfather was very, very good, but he's family. And, you know, when you have family around, you know, it's a little different than when some
of course
superstar comes in and gets on stage and just does the impossible on the instrument. It's something did click instantly. I remember I kind of almost had tears in my eyes, and it was really amazing. And the funny story I always tell is this guy, Alan Vizzuti, he's still out there as one of the top musicians in the world. And every time I see him, I always tell him the story about how he's the reason why I do this for a living. And he always laughs and says, I'm so sorry, man.
All right.
Just kidding, of course. But it's a great story, man. It's very inspiring. And I hit the ground running. Like the next day, I started practicing trumpet all day long, trying to get better and learn more about it and get stronger on the instrument.
Yeah. Was that ever, sorry, that real quick, that reminds me, him saying that, she reminds me, like, when I was younger and I was a performer, you know, I was an actor, and I actually played trumpet when I was younger in high school. But when I was later an actor, you know, and I was a young actor, you know, you'd meet other actors out there and be like, man, how do I, like, give me a piece of advice. And they would always go, like, find something else to do. You know, they'd always be like, pick another job. Like, that's first piece of advice. And you'd be like, wait a minute, that doesn't, you know.
I mean, I've gotten that advice many times, but it's just impossible. I mean, if you're in love with something, there's no amount of money and no way you're gonna get that out of your heart, get that out of your soul. So I'm very happy with what I'm doing.
Did you ever, so once you clicked into it, right? And I think it was interesting you were talking about too, like, cause I agree, right? I mean, you have kids, and I mean, I have a very little daughter, but, you know, we felt it before too, right? So people close to us, they give us advice, you know, and expertise, and we kind of, for some reason, it doesn't mean the same as sometimes a third party, right? Or someone different can, right? Like, was it when, after you decided to get serious about your instrument and your training, did all of a sudden you approach things differently with, like, maybe your grandfather, you know, and, like, things that he could teach you or anything like that? Did you start doing like lessons with him more or something? Or
yes, I mean, I had a new respect for everything musical in my family. All these people in my family that were doing this for a living, I always thought it was cool. But once I decided that I was going to go down the same path, all the questions changed, and all the focus that I had when I was with these particular relatives was much stronger with regards to what they do, especially my grandfather. I mean, the wonderful conversations we had about trumpet playing and practicing and what to do and what not to do on the instrument were just so great. Now, he passed away in 1987. I was, I don't know, 15, 16 years old. So I didn't have a whole lot of time with him, you know, because they would, maybe we'd visit three or four times a year, but
sure.
But I knew him well. I have his trumpet. I have a lot of the records and equipment that he had, his mouthpieces and all that. So
that's,
he's with
awesome
me all the time.
That's so cool. I love that. That's really cool, man.
Yeah.
So I want to switch to a moment too, because I mean, you're also a fantastic singer. So
thank you.
So when did that? I mean, you know what I mean? Because when did the singing come in? Right? Were you just focused? Were you doing singing and trumpet at the same time already, or was it you're playing trumpet and one day you're just like, what if I try singing?
Yeah, it was more like that. I had no interest in singing. I did sing in a couple school plays as a kid, but it wasn't for me. My father, like I mentioned, is a ridiculously good jazz singer and piano player. So I heard it a lot in the house. We always had Mel Torme and Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole and all the great singers, Tony Bennett, were always playing throughout the house. But it wasn't until I got to Atlanta, and I was telling you, I had these, you know, sometimes 8 performances a week at these different restaurants and these different venues. Early on in that whole process, one of the managers of the restaurant came up to me and said, hey, you guys sound really good and we'd like what you do, but you have to hire a singer. And I remember saying to him, well, look, you're only giving us, I forget what we were making. We were making like $100 each and a plate of spaghetti, you know?
Right, right.
And he said, I said, well, give me another $100 and spaghetti and I'll hire a singer. And he said, well, I can't give you any more money. And I said, well, what am I supposed to do? And he said, well, I'm going to have to hire another band with a singer. And I lied. And I said, well, I sing. He said, all right, next week you start singing. And I rushed home and I told my father what I had done. And he said, you're an idiot. And he said, come on. And he sat me down at the piano and he showed me a couple songs to sing. And I went back the next week and I sang 2 or 3 songs.
Wow.
And I think I was horrible, but he said, the manager said, no, man, the people like hearing the lyrics to the Great American Songbook. You did a good job. You're going to keep your job. And from that point on, I fell in love with singing and learning what these songs were about and learning how to develop this instrument,
the
vocal cord. And now I sing just as much, if not more, than I play.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was kind of. So how old would you say you were when like that story you mentioned happened?
I was 26 years old, 25 years old.
Wow. So you didn't even really like decide or even acknowledge your vocal instrument until you're like 25, 26.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, wow, good for you. Because, like, dude, I mean, your voice is beautiful. I mean, it's great. So, to really come upon that at, you know, I guess in mid 20s, you know, and develop it is great.
Yeah, I always had like a nice, you know, kind of quality to my voice, but I wasn't really a good singer. I had kind of a very shaky, almost Snow Whitey vibrato for a while. And, sure. But as time has gone on and, probably for the past 10 or 15 years, I've had my own big band, 17-piece orchestra. And you have to sing louder and more powerful in that setting. My voice has grown, and I practice a lot. I sing almost every day. I sing along with Sinatra's record in the wee small hours of the morning to try and sing those phrases as long as he did and try and sing the pitch as good as he did and try to color the vibrato at the end of the note like he did. So I do practice a lot vocally.
Wow. Yeah, that's fantastic. I love... Because that's one of the things I enjoy about your, you know, your artistry and your performance is that you're singing and playing the trumpet, you know? And it's totally different style, but, like, it makes me think of Louis Prima.
Yeah.
A little bit, you know what I mean? Just because, like, Louis was like that, like how Louis Prima would you know, blast his trumpet and then be singing as well.
Yeah, and, you know, there's, you know, Louis Armstrong did it.
Yeah.
Chet Baker, great trumpet player, singer. Clark Terry would sing. Guys out today, you know, like Jeremy Davenport plays trumpet and sings great. There's a handful of people that, I don't know why trumpet players kind of, maybe because we need to rest our lip.
You know? That's right.
It is a nice way to have a couple different options when people want to have you perform their corporate event or their private party or even at their theater, you know?
Right, exactly. That's great. So how did you jump from, because in your earlier kind of, in the earlier segment, when you told how you went from, you know, where you were to coming back to Atlanta and everything, you mentioned that you had, I mean, it sounds like there was a gap where after high school, did you end up developing your trumpet to where you were able to go ahead and go on tour with some folks?
Well, after high school, I did my first 2 years of college at Fredonia State College in New York. And, which, by the way, I'm going there tomorrow to
I saw that on your website.
Yeah, I'm going there after I see you guys to do some master classes and a concert. But I ended up going to school at Fredonia State College. I did 2 years there, or basically a year and a half. And then I got this phone call from my private trumpet teacher. And he had been called to go out and perform an extended tour with the Tommy Dorsey Orchestra. And he couldn't do it. He's a business owner and he's a professional musician in Buffalo, New York, and he was a teacher at a college there. And he suggested that they call me. And so I said, okay, I'm going to leave college and I'm going to go on the road with the Dorsey Band. And you go out there for a couple of weeks, and if you pass the test and if you can play the music, they keep you. Otherwise, they buy you a plane ticket and you're on your way back home.
Oh, okay.
I did pass the test, and I stayed on the road with them for a solid year. And that year of traveling around the world with one of the greatest big bands that ever was college enough for me. I mean, right. I learned everything that I needed to learn about reading music, about blending in a section, about listening. I didn't sing at that time, but they had a great singer in the band, Walt Andrus, and he sang like Sinatra. So I got to see that every single night. In fact, the music that we played, the sheet music, the actual pieces of paper that we were looking at, were the same pieces of paper, most of them, that the guys looked at in the 1940s.
Wow.
There might even be quotes on there where it says, Frankie comes in here talking about Sinatra, right?
Yeah.
Yellow pieces of paper all tore up over the years and all that. So I was part of this history of the music, and it was just, it was unbelievable. So when I left that band, I felt like I had a master's in trumpet performance.
That's amazing. That's amazing how, like, having that as an artist too, having sometimes just getting out there and doing it, right? Just gives you that school, almost like street education almost, right? So, all right, we're gonna break. And then we'll come right back more with Joe Grandston after the break. Coming back this afternoon, coming back smooth, everybody. Tuesday afternoon, know the scene. Thanks for listening, everybody. By the way, if you enjoy the show, we would love for you to subscribe to our podcast of the show. If you go to your favorite podcast app and type in WSIC Know the Scene, you can subscribe and you can listen to every episode as it comes out and go back and listen to past episodes as well. So we've had a lot of great people that we've had the chance to talk to this year in our first year of doing this show. And just great, great. You can go back, listen to the catalog and re-listen to episodes like today to hear great stories. So again, we're chatting today with Joe Grandston, wonderful, talented, experienced musician, singer, trumpeter, arranger. Do you arrange your own stuff as well, Joe? I imagine you probably do.
I do. I do arrange some of the music that we play, but with regards to my big band, I have a guy in the band, a lead trombone player named Wes Funderburk, that really writes all of our arrangements, which I think is why my band has the unique sound that it has, because it's kind of all coming from his arrangements that he writes. Even though it's Great American Songbook, it's brand new, fresh vibe on it, you know?
Right. That's so cool. I've noticed that in some of the big bands and folks that I've met, who play around. I've gotten to know the guys with the Fabulous Equinox Orchestra. I don't know if you've ran into them. And you know, when I met them too, I think their piano player does their arranging. So it seems like that's kind of a not an uncommon thing that, you know, someone in the band is the arranger mind, you know?
Yeah, that happens a lot in bands. I mean, you know, and I know those guys too, Jeremy and
Jeremy and Clay.
Very talented people, and you get a guy like Harry Connick Jr. He does it all himself. I mean,
oh, really? Interesting, huh?
An absolute genius. He can write the arrangements. He can write the songs. He could dance. He could sing. He can play the piano. He can act. So he's kind of a one man thing. But everybody, the mere mortals out here, we have certain things that we're great at, and hopefully, and certain things that we need to work on a lot. And arranging has never really been. When I say arranging, I mean arranging for a big band where you know the every instrument, what key the instrument's in, and the range it can play in and all that.
Wow.
That's kind of a specialized thing, and you need to learn about that and study that. And every band kind of has a guy or two that really loves that side of things. It takes a long time to arrange a song.
Right.
Even really good at it. And I'd personally rather be out on the golf course.
Yeah, you go. Yeah. What? You know, what?
Do the arrangement.
Well, like, so I'm imagining, like, following on what you're saying to that, I mean, so they've got to understand the theory. I mean, the music theory, obviously, but the intricacies of each separate instrument and the sound that they make and the right way that for them to come in and come out of things as well, right? I mean, like you said, it's a much, almost like a composer.
Yeah, exactly. And with like, particularly with my big band, we've been together for quite a while now, and we stay very busy. So this guy, Wes, that writes my arrangements, he doesn't only just write for the instruments. He knows the guy that plays that particular chair. He knows the guy that plays lead trumpet, and he knows what this guy can do. And if there's any limitations, he knows the guy that plays lead alto and what his sound is like and what his vibrato is like. So he hears that as he's writing. And I may sit with him and I may say, well, I want to sing this part and I want to modulate here. And I think the tempo should be around here. And I'd like to do it in a bossa nova style or up-tempo swing style. So that kind of input comes from me because, you know, I got to do the song the way I want to do it. All the really, really intricate stuff that makes the arrangement pop and makes it special comes from this guy, Wes, and he gets better every single year. He was great when we first started this. We were much younger, but now it's almost hard to get him now because even though he answers the phone when I call, he's very busy and he's writing arrangements for some major, major acts now.
Wow. Wow. You were mentioned that your band's been together a long time. So I was going to ask, do you have a lot of the same, do you have consistent, you know, band members who are playing with you all the time, or is it, hey, depending on the show here or there, we got to sub out? Like how frequently do you have to sub?
Well, when it comes to the full big band, the 17, 18 piece big band, yeah, I have a set group of guys that I love and I've been using forever. But there is those times when somebody has a family emergency, sure, or somebody's not feeling great, or somebody gets the call to go out for 2 weeks with some major act and they're going to make, you know, a big money where they sub out their particular chair. And that's okay. That's just, yeah, that's just the way it goes. As long as they get a musician that is of equal quality, it's totally acceptable and it's done all the time. But yeah, I do have we're kind of a family and we do love playing together. We're going to be going to Lincoln Center in New York City. We're going to play at Dizzy's Club July 15th.
Oh, wow.
We're going to go to Little Italy and have dinner and then play a show. So it's a family.
That's nice. That's nice. So during the break, I mentioned, you know, behind you is a picture of you and looks like Clint Eastwood playing some trumpet together. There's got to be a story behind that, I'm guessing, right?
Clint Eastwood. Yeah. What a good dude he is, man. He hired me many years ago. He heard one of my CDs on the radio out in California and he called me. And I couldn't believe it was him, right? But I thought it was a friend of mine lying, you know, but he would, hello, Joe. He had that voice. And he invited me to play a party for him and his friends at Tehama Golf Club, which is where he lives in Carmel, California. It's his golf club. And so I went out there and we played golf together. We had dinner together. And then he had me back a few months later. And before I knew it, I was friends with this guy. And I'm playing golf with him. And he's one of the nicest people I know. He played trumpet as a kid. He plays piano now. And he composes a lot of the music for his movies.
Oh.
But as a kid, trumpet for a little while. So the picture behind me, we were at his restaurant called the Mission Ranch in Carmel, and I was playing, and I was sitting in with the piano player there, and I remember I was singing a song and he came up and grabbed my trumpet, and we played, I think we did two songs together. One of them was My Funny Valentine, if I remember right, but we got a lot of pictures from that night. And what a cool dude, man. What a relaxed, for as big a star as and as big a celebrity as he is, he's just down to earth. You can just sit and talk to him about anything, just real chill.
Are there, I can imagine in a career, because you've had an amazing career, like, and continue, right, to have one. Like, are there one or two other real special kind of moments like that, that are maybe some of your favorite ones that you've had so far?
You know, all the moments with Clint, whether it's going to dinner, whether it's going to a jazz club, whether it's, being on his movie set and watching how he works with the actors, those are things I'll never forget. I mean, they've been amazing. But one time in particular, I was opening up. My band was opening up for a party for Clint, and the headliner was Kenny G. And we were at soundcheck, and Clint came to the soundcheck, and he introduced me to Kenny G, and he said, I would like you guys to do a duet together. Well, of course, I was thrilled to do that. Kenny wasn't as thrilled as I was.
I was going
to
say, I was like, you're both like, this is, thanks, Clint. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Clint. Now we got to rehearse a song. But for me, it was the opportunity of a lifetime. For Kenny, it was just like another 35 minutes out of his day to meet this trumpet player. But Kenny suggested we play Somewhere Over the Rainbow as a duet. And we picked the key and we ran it once with Kenny's band and it was fantastic. And we played that song And after the concert was over, the next day I played golf with Kenny G, and he said, why don't you fly back to Malibu where I live, bring your wife and come and hang for a couple of days, and then you and I can spend a week or so together. We'll write some music and we'll produce a kind of a smooth jazz CD for you.
Wow.
So I did that. I flew to Malibu, he and myself and his producer named Walter Afanasyev, who's just a genius producer, wrote some music, and we did this record called Close to My Heart. That was back in 2009, I believe. And man, just the memories from that are incredible. In fact, I'm going to go back to Malibu in the next few months and record again with Kenny at his studio. So I'm excited about that. But he's another class act, man. Just loves music, practices all the time. We'll do anything for you. World-class person.
That's awesome. You know, and that's got to be one of the cool things that I've picked up more and more in talking to great folks like yourself and talented musicians like you, as I've kind of been talking to people through this show, is, you know, it really seems like there's that brotherhood of you know, the craft, right? Like the musicians, they meet each other and there's this really energy of wanting to work with each other and help each other and share like the art together.
Yeah, it's very true. And it's even though Kenny's music is different than my sure. style of music, we're both musicians and we want to hang and play together. And you know, jazz musicians, you can go anywhere in the world and sit in at a jazz club, and we all know the same language, the same tunes, the same keys, and you could almost put a show together instantly. It happens all the time.
That's awesome. All right, well, we're gonna take a quick break from this show, and then we're gonna come back with one more section here to talk with Mr. Joe as we continue along. Thanks, everybody. Come on back.
Everyday words seem to turn into love songs.
We're back, everybody, for Know the Scene.
Well, I tell you, that's life.
That's life. Here we go. Get ready. That's a classic. It's always a fun one. Justin Dionne here with this week's Know the Scene, chatting with Joe Grandston, just fantastic musician, and been enjoying chatting with him this afternoon and listening to his story. Make sure, if you have not yet purchased tickets for this weekend, March 8th, performance by Joe and his band doing this particular show, The Good Life, The Artistry of Tony Bennett. Make sure that you get those tickets on canearts.org. It's going to be a great night of music, and I'm sure more. Joe, tell us about this this Tony Bennett show.
This is a new show for us. This came about a year ago after we lost Tony Bennett. I guess we lost him maybe last August. A good friend of mine, Larry Farber, and I had been talking about putting together some type of tribute to Tony Bennett, and it kind of came together, and we do it in all different sizes. We can do it with the big band. We can do it with my 10-piece band. We can have female vocalists join us. We've written kind of a very broad spectrum of kind of his life and how the story works together. So at the Kane Center coming up, we are going to really, really focus on the wonderful, wonderful classic songs that Tony Bennett sang and made famous. We're also going to revisit his relationship with Bobby Hackett, who is one of the greatest relaxing trumpet players you've ever heard in your life. Bobby Hackett was around the same time as Tony Bennett and Sinatra. He was friends with Louis Armstrong. He played a cornet, not a trumpet. Mm-hmm. It looks like a trumpet, but it's a little bit smaller and a little bit more compact, and it has more of a buttery, smooth sound. And Tony Bennett absolutely adored him. So the fact that I sing and play trumpet is perfect to kind of feature Tony Bennett and a couple of things from Bobby Hackett. But it's a wonderful show. It's got a lot of different sides to it, different vibes to it. I understand at the Kane Center we'll be doing an intermission, which is nice because that breaks up the show, and we can kind of start at the beginning of his career and then kind of after intermission move on to a little later. I mean, the guy had a long career, so if you really wanted to do it right, it'd have to be a 17-hour show. What are you
going to
do?
Yeah, I don't know about that. We'd have to serve dinner and everything at least with that.
Yeah.
Be a full five-courser. So then I'm assuming you're going to bring a cornet with you as well.
I am really trying hard to get a hold of one of Bobby Hackett's cornets.
Oh,
his son lives in Atlanta or lives north of Atlanta. And we are going to get together, I think tomorrow. But anyway, if that doesn't work out, yeah, I'm going to try and bring a cornet of some sort and just, just give it a shot. Yeah. It's not as easy to play as the trumpet. It's kind of a different animal. But if you've heard Tony Bennett songs, like if you've heard like the very thought of you, his version of that, that's Bobby Hackett playing. If you ever hear any of the Jackie Gleason Orchestra albums from back in the day, Jackie Gleason was a conductor as well as a comedian and an actor and all that.
Yeah.
And he loved music and he had an orchestra and his favorite was Bobby Hackett. So Bobby's the guy playing all those wonderful, beautiful cornet solos in the orchestra. So I grew up listening to that too, and I love it. And the fact that it connects to Tony Bennett was very exciting for me because it's a part of the show that anybody else doing kind of a Tony Bennett tribute probably wouldn't add into the mix, you know?
Yeah. Now, do you as a, as a trumpeter and musician yourself, when you play shows, for instance, you know, I know that like we just had Eric Gales, who's an amazing blues guitarist, right, come through, and he brought, you know, like four or five guitars with him, right? Do you bring multiple trumpets with you? Like, is that from a trumpet side, is that a thing too, where there's certain songs or certain, you know, styles where you're like, I want this particular trumpet over that particular trumpet? Is that a thing?
Maybe not as much as a guitar player. But there is different sounding instruments that we might use. Like I'll probably have a flugelhorn with me.
Yeah, okay.
Chuck Mangione kind of made that famous, Clark Terry. But if you're a classical trumpet player and your career is made playing in orchestras and playing recitals, you might have a lot of trumpets. You probably have a piccolo trumpet. You probably have a B-flat trumpet like this. You probably have a C trumpet. You might have an E-flat trumpet. You might have a cornet. And you better be able to play all those instruments on a very high level if you want to keep your gig with that orchestra. For a jazz musician, we generally stick with the B-flat trumpet and occasionally the flugelhorn. The cornet's a new animal for me, like I mentioned, and I'm starting to really fall in love with it, and I may do more and more of that. But the cornet is the same key as the trumpet. There's no different transposition that you have to learn. It's basically the same size mouthpiece. It's got a little shorter shank on it, but what goes on your lips is the same size. So it's not that much of a difference from the trumpet.
Is it a technique, more of a technique difference, like you're talking about between the cornet and trumpet?
I think it's a little bit more of a technique. I mean, the trumpet is a little more versatile when it comes to playing high notes and screeching over the top of a band and playing much more powerful. The cornet's a little bit of a sweeter sound. In the early 1900s, the cornet is what all the trumpet virtuosos would play. They play all these Carnival of Venice type songs, all these technical things with all these different notes. I've been meaning to actually learn more about why the change from cornet to trumpet happened. And I'd like to talk to some of my musician friends and some of my music historians to find out why that is, because everybody played the cornet in the old days, King Oliver, but then you saw Louis Armstrong and he had the trumpet. So there's probably a reason why that all happened. I don't really know enough about it.
How interesting. That's so interesting to like think about all that. You know what I mean? Because to the general audience member, I'm sure they're just like, oh, it's a trumpet. Right.
Yeah.
But then learning those. I love it. I think learning that kind of stuff is really interesting.
Yeah. But if you hear the trumpet, and if I bring both, if you hear a trumpet and then you hear a cornet side by side, even if you don't know anything about music, you'll notice the difference. You'll notice one's a little sweeter and a little bit more compact and a little more maybe buttery is the word.
Oh, but okay, yeah.
Yeah, and then the trumpet could be a little bit more brassy and a little bit more, maybe a little brighter, depending on who's playing it.
Going back to the Tony Bennett show for a minute, so you've played with, you've played with Barry White, Moody Blues, Temptations, Aretha Franklin, Glenn Miller Band Orchestra, right? Did you ever play with or have any experiences with Tony Bennett?
No, I never played with Tony Bennett, but I saw him live a handful of times, and it was just amazing to me. And one time I was in New York City, and I was invited to a party, an after party. Him and Diana Krall had done a show at Carnegie Hall. And there was an after party and they were there. And I met her. I didn't get to meet him, which was kind of a drag. I really wanted to meet him, but I stood very, very close to him. And I could feel that aura. I mean, the guy was around forever. I mean, he shook hands with all of my heroes, you know, from Sinatra to Louis Armstrong to Nat King Cole. So I never got to meet him. I do know a couple people that played with him a few times, but I've always loved him. And I'll tell this story on stage, but you know, in 10 seconds, I can tell you that growing up, my aunt, my grandmother's sister, who lived to be 103, loved Tony Bennett, and she could sing, not professionally, but she would sing around the house, and she would always be singing Tony Bennett songs in full voice, just like he would, way up top. So I just always loved that sound. And you know, he's different than Frank Sinatra. He's quite a bit different. Same song, same music sometimes, but Tony's voice was much higher. And Tony kind of always went for that big ending and that big high note at the end. And it was very dramatic, almost Broadway-ish, you know?
Yeah. I never got to see him, but I know, you know, I was always amazed at, you know, I had friends and people I knew who got to see him. I mean, even later on, they would just say, like, he never missed a beat. I mean, they said it. They said his shows were still, I mean, he gave everything out at his shows, you know?
Yeah.
And we put on a great show.
Great, without an intermission. I saw him, you know, a few months before COVID, he came through Atlanta, and I saw him at the Woodruff Arts Center in Atlanta Symphony Hall. I don't know how many people were there, 3,000 people. It was sold out. And he came out, and he did 90 minutes. He was 90, maybe 2 years old, 91 years old, and he was dancing. He did a couple spins, and he sang like an absolute angel. And I was sitting in the, I don't know, second row or third row back from the stage, just watching him in awe. I was with my wife, and I just said, God, I wish I could do that. Man, just how cool. And he was on autopilot in the sense, not in the sense that he was just going through the motions, but in the sense that he had done this so many times. It was just like,
it was natural, like breathing. Yeah. Like breathing, like just, so when you're approaching a show like this, you know, how much, I mean, obviously you're doing Tony Bennett, but are you, I mean, you're still putting, you know, some of your arrangements, you know, like your guy is still putting some of his kind of little flares and y'all's own flares on this a little bit, right?
Yeah, yeah, we've taken a lot of Tony Bennett songs and we've kind of put our own thing on them. I mean, we're not reinventing all this stuff. I want it to sound like the Tony Bennett that people are used to, and it's certainly not an impersonation of Tony Bennett.
Right.
I can't sing like that. It's me doing my thing, but paying honor to him, paying tribute to him, and it's not all Tony Bennett either. Believe me. I mean, part of the show is his relationship with Bobby Hackett. Part of the show is his relationship with Frank Sinatra. So there'll be a little bit of crossover in there for sure.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. So yeah, so everyone a little bit of everything and kind of the story of Tony Bennett too in there.
Yeah, and you know, I'm bringing with me some of the best musicians I've ever worked with. So I'm not going to just have them behind me backing me up while I'm doing Tony Bennett. I'm going to feature them on some things. You're going to hear some one of the most amazing drummers you've ever heard.
Oh, and, nice.
And, the piano player is not only a great jazz player, but also an amazing classical player, and my bass player is world class. So it's gonna be fun.
If they play our grand, they'll have a nice little Bösendorfer Imperial Grand to play on.
I heard he's excited, man. He's excited.
Well, I always love getting to be like, hey, we have a nice piano.
Yeah.
So awesome. Yeah. Well, Joe, dude, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate your time. Thanks for sharing these wonderful stories. We are gonna look forward to seeing you on Friday, March 8th. Get those tickets, guys. And Joe, we'll see you. We'll see you soon.
Thanks, Justin. Great spending time with you.
Yes, sir. You too. Have a great day.
All right.
That's life. Well, I tell you, I can't deny it. Many times I thought of quitting, but my heart just wouldn't buy it. What if I didn't think it was worth one try? I'd jump right on a big bird and I'd fly. I've been a